Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're positively into one of the crazier, busier weeks of the year. I mean, the Orioles are home all week. Luke is at the ballpark. We have an NFL schedule coming out. I'm fatigued from all of that jockeying around the planet, trying to catch the Northern Lights, and still failing miserably. And I might even get my Oriole press pass back before it's all over. But by Friday, we're going to be at Fadley's, and I'm going to need a crab cake and some shrimp salad. Our friends at the Maryland Lottery are doing it with the Pac-Man scratch-offs. We'll be down at the New Lexington Market on Friday. Also going to be there on Wednesday for the Crab Derby. I got my flyer here. Alicia gave me this. I'm going to hold it up. Crab Derby, world-famous annual Crab Derby. This is on the 15th. That's Wednesday from 1 to 3. It's in the middle of the Oriole game. Don't blame me. Alicia, what are you thinking? We'll be talking about all of this stuff, but we have a little horse race on the hill on Saturday. It is the 149th running of the Preakness Stakes. This is my 33rd Preakness on the radio. And you know, it's a tradition for me to do racing all week long. Bob Baffert will be here this week. Donna Brothers will be here this week. And because I can't get Clem Florio anymore, I get the current legends of Maryland racing here. Frank Vespi hosted a show here last year on Saturday mornings and getting you ready for race day. He is with the Racing Biz as well as the Baltimore Banner these days and checking in. I want to give you some love on the loss of your dad this week. I know timing and everything. This is the biggest week of the year for you and your business and everything you're trying to do with racing. But first off, condolences. It's good to see you. Sorry I missed you at the post position draw on Monday night.
Yeah, no. Thank you for all that, and thank you for Legends of Maryland Racing. That's quite a lot of praise.
Well, there aren't a lot of people left that know as much about it as you do. I mean, I'm not being flippant, but like I don't put 105.7 or any of these local yokels because it's too hard to specialize in horse racing unless you specialize in it, and that's why once a year when I bring experts in, I learned so much this week, and there's so much to be learned. And, you know, I had Alan Foreman and David Richardson a couple weeks ago, went up to Greenmount Bowl, and we talked about the history, what it used to be, and then where they want it to go. And this is the week where we're in the here and now, right? We have a half-condemned racetrack with a future for the, you know, that's laid out at this point, and we know we're going to run this race at Laurel. Just a lot of things going on, and I would think you being in the middle of all this, catch our audience up outside of the racing world as to the last time you and I talked 6 months ago. Lots changed, man.
You said a mouthful there. It's a crazy time in Maryland racing right now, and we got legislation that passed recently. The governor just signed it the other day. That's going to, we hope, lead to a revitalized Pimlico. Laurel's going to close, going to have a training center. Don't know where that's going to be yet.
One training center, not two, correct? One?
One plus Pimlico. So,
gotcha. Okay.
So horses will be training at those two different locations, but Laurel not going to be one of them. So that's
a big thing, whether it's going to be in Baltimore County, Harford County, right? That training center is important.
Yeah, it's critical to the future of racing in Maryland because Pimlico's not big enough to house all the horses that you need to have a robust racing program.
How about this? I got football fans here. The Ravens don't practice at the stadium. They play at the stadium. They practice in Owings Mills. They have a facility that is for training, right? Yeah. Like literally it's a training. They call it the training center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and that's a little bit what's going to end up happening here in Maryland. Pimlico, I think Pimlico will ultimately house less than half of the horses that the people think they need to have a robust program. They think they need around 1,400 race horses in training, ready to run, to have a good program here that is basically year round. And Pimlico's probably going to be able to hold 600. So the training center is a critical piece of the whole puzzle here. And right now it looks like they're willing to entertain other possibilities, is my understanding, but they're down to sort of two main possibilities. One is Shamrock Farm in Woodbine, kind of west of Pimlico. And the other is the Mitchell Farm property, which is up in Aberdeen. And those are the two that they're kind of looking at. My conversations with horsemen, they don't want to go to Aberdeen. I can tell you that, but you know, at the same time, if you want to stay in the business, you'll go where you're able to. So We're going to have to see how that all plays out, but that's kind
proximity's
of
power in that case, right? Like every time
sure.
you have to ship a horse, move a horse, you would rather it be closer to Pimlico, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, particularly given what's gone on with the bridge and stuff, do you want to ship your horse around the Beltway? Probably not if you could avoid it. So being closer is better. And, you know, because we've been over the last 40 years, Maryland racing has been in Pimlico, Laurel, and Bowie. So there's kind of a center of a lot of horsemen in that Laurel, Bowie, and even Point South area. Those guys don't want to have to truck all the way up to Aberdeen. Aberdeen's like the other side of the moon to them. So how this gets worked out is going to be important. And I'm sure Alan Foreman said this to you. He said it many, many times that people need to not let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And, you know, this was the plan that they were able to get through the General Assembly, which is very important. This is the plan that allows them to renew Pimlico and chart a future for Maryland racing on the amount of money that was available.
You know, Frank, you're in the industry, and I'll just say this, man, as a guy who was thrown out of the press box 3 years ago, a guy that's been doing this for 40 years, a guy that, you know, can talk about Clem Florio and Vinny Perrone and Andy Byer setting speed charts and 35 years ago and Ekman walking around with a cigar, chomping on it with white gloves on, like all of that old school, like stuff that, you know, we remember and the track sort of falling apart and all the Preakness lore and punching horses and secretary. I mean, everything that's happened through all of this, I've yet to, until recently, feel like I've talked to anybody with influence. You know what I'm saying? Like when I would sit with Sal Sinatra, I'm like, you're not really running it. You're just the guy in the seat. Belinda, Stronach, the Francis people, that they could never sort of get what they wanted. And there was never a face on it after Frank died to say, I'm running it. I'm out in front of it. Here are the things that are going on, to even compete with Churchill or to compete with slots years ago when they were trying to get all that through the legislature, right? That it feels like, and maybe I'm wrong, and you've been at this a long time too, it feels like there's some certainty that I can talk about this week for this race. And I've been on the air 32 years, dude. Like 32
that's,
years in
that's
a row,
impressive, by the
I
way.
I have been talking about the Preakness. I have the tapes of me and Clem in 91 and 92 and 93, and like all of that. So, but it was always, and Dick Girardi and Marty, who declined it. Marty McGee declined to come on this week because he didn't want to handicap the race. I'm like, you think I want to talk about the race? I want to talk about the industry and where the future is. But every time Dick and I would get together, it's, oh man, are they going to make it? You know, right, what's going to happen? It's cloudy. It's nebulous. We don't know. Where's Belinda? Where's Frank? Oh, they hate each other. Oh, that's like all of this is going on. This feels like the first time where we're going to stop talking about the uncertainty and we're going to start talking about this is getting done. This is happening. There's money. It's in stone. The Belindas are leaving. The Bruno Marses are, we're going to have a different thing. And there's going to be a David Richardson and Alan Ford, somebody that is here who I can talk to, who can get me answers. Cause I've always struggled with that in the industry. It's frustrated me.
Now it's an interesting point you make. And I had this conversation with a trainer a couple of months ago and I said, what do you think about this plan? And he basically said, I don't like it except for one thing. I think it might actually happen. And, you know, that's a thing that I have sort of heard from a number of people in the industry that, you know, they'd rather not focus everything at Pimlico. They'd rather keep Laurel. They're not all that excited about the training center idea. But everybody acknowledges that the status quo is untenable. We need change now. You know, we can't keep doing this. I mean, if you've been out to Pimlico, you see the state of that facility. This can't continue. And so we are very hopeful that this, they're doing kind of a two-step here. There's money for new facilities, but there's also this new concept of ownership where the state, through this racetrack operating authority, will take ownership. It'll contract with a nonprofit group that will run day-to-day racing. And there is a hope that this puts Maryland in charge of Maryland's future in racing. And if that all works, then everything you just said is exactly right.
Well, I mean, that you've summed it up. I mean, and this is Frank Vespi's here. What are you doing? Racing biz, banner, what can I promote for you?
Well, thank you. The website's theracingbiz.com. We're going to have all kinds of Preakness coverage all week, including a horse-by-horse analysis, every horse in the race. We'll have profiles, we'll have picks, all kinds of stuff. Come on out to theracingbiz.com. We are partnering with the Baltimore Banner on race coverage, including some articles we'll be sharing back and forth. I'll be writing a column handicapping the race in a day or two for them. So lots of stuff there. We also have a radio show that airs on ESPN Richmond and ESPN Harrisonburg in Virginia, which you can catch at theracingbiz.com as well. And we'll have all sorts of Preakness related coverage and coverage most of the year.
Well, let's take a backtrack here from the racing biz, and we'll get to the race itself in a minute. What is the state of the business? And as I've gone through a lot of technical things here, because as I've learned, but what am I leaving out? And what should the general public know about the future of all of this? And the one thing I learned on Monday at the post draw is they're probably not going to be a lot of people. They're not going to be 150,000 people. They're not bringing the co-eds in from upstate Pennsylvania and
No.
all getting drunk in the infield. I mean, all of that is sort of Bruno Mars, like the EDM show that Belinda would bring in here with the beautiful people and all of that. That there's going to be a new vision for this that may include a lot of elements of high-end this and gamble that and cigar this and hats. I mean, that's what it should be, but used to be the People's Party, right? And
Yep,
that's the way
exactly.
we called it, the People's Party. What is the current state of this and the vision moving forward? Because a lot of the people, and you're with them every day, that are going to make this functional over the next 10 years, we hope.
Well, it's a really good question, Ness, and the we over the last several years, I think the Preakness has lost its way, or really the management has lost its way on what the Preakness is. As you just said, it was the People's Party. It was like a Baltimore rite of passage. You went to the Preakness, you went out in the infield, you did all the stuff. And over the last several years, it's become this kind of event that's nowhere. It's very expensive, but nobody can claim that, Pimlico is a high-end sort of facility. The music hasn't really worked in the last few years. I mean, the crowds aren't very big. I mean, look, last year they had, I think, around 37,000 people on Preakness Day. It used to be 120,000. That's okay if that's the vision of a different event, but the vision's not working. And so I think that's one of the big challenges that the operating authority, the new management's gonna have to tackle is what is this event and how do we make it be the best version of that it can be?
Man, I remember Kegasus.
Yeah, sure.
Like all of these conceptual things that they have. I think Belinda's concept was this was going to be a South Beach party in West Baltimore. Like it never made any sense. And had
No.
she ever made herself available to sit across the, I would have sat here on the radio and said, this doesn't make any sense. Tell me how this makes sense. I might have been a little nicer than that, especially in the beginning, but I'm probably not now that all these years have gone out and I've been thrown out of her press box, amongst other things. Like I just don't, I've never understood this concept of what it used to be and what it was and where they were going with it and how it could be rescued. And I guess I am heartened by the fact that at some point it's been rescued, but what is it and what will the week leading up? I mean, I'm doing Crab Derby here, and I can't begin to tell you how proud Bill Devine and Antsy Devine are down at Fadley's of putting this on 40 years ago. PETA, by the way, wants them to use mechanical crabs. Good luck with that, PETA. That's probably not happening this week, but we're using Maryland crabs. But these are the kinds of things as I hold this near and dear, and Bud Light Nights, and bringing Blondie in to play at the Harbor on Tuesday night, and having a country act on Wednesday, and having a rap act on Thursday, and bringing in the Gin Blossoms on Friday, and then having Cheap Trick play out in the infield, and have 98 Rock with boobies, and like all the things that have happened over 40 years. I'd love to know what they think this can be to really bring 100,000 people back out again to make it a Baltimore Day to make the black eyed Susan the pink thing and to do what they do in Kentucky, which is give the kids off from school on Friday and shut the whole friggin' city down for a week and a half and really turn it into a spring festival. I mean, that's really what it should be moving forward with a horse race.
No, I agree with you, and I'd love to see that. What I'd love to see them do from a horse racing perspective, I'd love to see two things. One is they need to put more oomph in the undercard to build up Friday to make Saturday a better day of racing. Second thing I'd love to see is turn Thursday into a celebration of Maryland horsemen and Maryland racing. Run a bunch of races restricted to Maryland horses and Maryland horsemen and make that a big party for the locals too. And then the second thing, and you're right, look, for a long, long time, the Preakness covered the nut for Maryland racing for the entire year. It made lots of money. It made the purse account whole. It made the company profitable. It was the linchpin of everything else that happened in Maryland all year long. It's not that anymore. And the question is really, can you get it back? Can you turn this back into the engine that drives the entire vehicle of Maryland racing? And that's what they're going to have to figure out. And that's what we're going to see if they can.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a food truck thing or if it's a band thing, or, I mean, clearly it's a weather thing. No matter what, it's a weather thing. You know, and you're always sort of praying for that. And as you tear the facility down and make it more open air, it'll always be a weather thing. So that'll always be, you know, a part of it. Frank Vespi is here. He covers horses. So let's get to the race and let's get to McPeak and Baffert and Chad Brown and D. Wayne and the fact that we have one of the greatest Kentucky Derbies ever, right? I mean, three horses at the end.
And
we have the winner coming. We have Baffert coming, who's been treated like the Orioles and the Ravens have treated me in recent years. And like, and so we have the biggest star in the sport. And I think we have a great race, right? This is an interesting race in that from a betting standpoint, from nine horses and connection stories to beat the band in this one, I think.
No, I think you're exactly right. It's funny because there was a lot of angst, like right after the Kentucky Derby, and McPeak, who trains the winner, Mystic Dan, was kind of going, well, we'll see. I don't know if we're going to go to the Preakness. And there was a lot of angst, like we're not going to get the Derby winner. We might not get any horse out of the Derby. It's going to be terrible, blah, 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 blah. And we ended up with we're getting three out of the Kentucky Derby, including the winner and the fourth place finisher. So that always adds a little oomph to the race. And then, as you said, two Bob Bafferts, two D. Wayne Lucases, you got Chad Brown, you got Brad Cox, you got kind of all the top names in the sport. So the race is actually coming together as a really interesting horse race and a really interesting handicapping puzzle. You know, we're hoping for no scratches. You're hoping it all holds together. And if you get that, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, the one thing we were hoping for is that Copper Tax would go because he's the local horse. He's got the local connections, but they decided to sit it out. And yeah, you know, you can't blame him. You can't blame him for making a decision that they believe is in
the best
interest
of the horse.
Well, you
couldn't blame McPeak if he didn't bring the horse back in 2 weeks too. And when you talk about the puzzle and how complex all of this is and the sanctity of the Triple Crown, and I go back to Spend the Buck kind of screwing it all up, and I always kid Dick Girardi, Spend the Buck lured him to Pennsylvania, never came home, never came back to Stoneleigh. but for the industry, that part of the puzzle, what made sense to Secretariat in Seattle SLU 50 years ago, doesn't necessarily make sense for the industry, for the horse, for good humanity for the horses and the equine industry. And what would have to happen? My understanding is Belmont doesn't want to move, which is kind of crazy because, like, wouldn't they want more Triple Crown winners? Wouldn't that make more sense for them? But this has been an industry slow to change. I don't need to tell you that. I mean, baseball's been painfully slow. Now they put a guy on second base every night. We bitch about it in the extra innings. But this change in horse racing, fundamentally, we would never have a problem anymore if this race got banged back a week, 2 weeks, however they would come together. But nobody can get along with the Churchill people, right?
Well, that's true on the one hand. On the other hand, at some level, you know, Churchill's going to run on the first Saturday in May. That's just set in stone. That's the way it's
That's
going to
when the
be.
race begins, right?
Yeah. So, okay. So put them aside. What do we do next? That's sort of what the question is. And, you mentioned Secretariat. And here's the thing that I think is an important thing for people to understand. When Secretariat won the Preakness, he won the Gotham. 2 weeks later, he ran in the Wood Memorial. 2 weeks later, he ran in the Kentucky Derby. And 2 weeks later, he ran in the Preakness, because that's how you handled a good horse in 1973. No one handles a horse like that anymore. In fact, in the Preakness, when Derby horses run back in the Preakness now, that will be the only time in most of their careers that they run on 2 weeks rest. So it's just a completely different
Well, we
era.
had four men pitching rotations, and Palmer went eight innings
Yeah,
every night, right? Like
exactly. Guys
for
pitched
15
300
years.
innings. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's amazing you bring up baseball, because it's like, as hidebound as baseball is, they're like crazy radicals compared to horse racing. Like, we can't change anything in this sport. And I look at it this way. The Preakness is the second most important race in North America. The Derby is the Derby. But if you look at TV ratings, the Derby's up here, the Preakness is here, the Belmont is here, and everything else doesn't even exist. Like the Breeders' Cup, the last year, for example, the Preakness, which was kind of a bland Preakness, did TV ratings that were six times what the Breeders' Cup was. So it's the second most important race in the country. If horse
Because
racing
it
were,
has the Kentucky Derby winner, usually.
no, certainly. But it's part of the Triple Crown, and the Triple Crown is what's important in terms of the business's ability to reach a public beyond the racing bubble. And so if we were a functioning business, we'd be looking at this and saying, is the Preakness under pressure? And if it is, what can we do about that? If we move it, can we move it in such a way that we still keep the public's interest? Can we build this up? But horse racing doesn't operate this way. Churchill's where it is, Naira's where it is, and screw the guy in the middle is kind of the attitude. Although I have heard some rumblings that they're going forward, there may be some flexibility, some willingness to have conversations. So I'd like to see people really dig into
Who's
the
it
question.
bad for? That's the thing I like. They've already destroyed the Preakness and they're going to need to rebuild it anyway. And if the horse doesn't come to the Preakness, guess what, Belmont? You're getting nothing. So like I to me, it's just basic. If you get in a room and you say what's good for it, for all of it, for all of us. I've been talking about this for 20 years. Once horses stopped racing in that way this century, that is what could save the Preakness. That is what could make racing better. Because if this race were next week, we'd have a better field, more horses, maybe fierceness or whoever that year's Derby disappointment would be more apt to come back, and now it never comes back. And that would help all of it. That would help the industry, to your point, outside of the bubble, or making the bubble bigger with, to your point, our ratings were up. Well, people were coming in for a hockey game too. I mean, they've managed, NBC's managed to pair this with hockey and Ovechkin and different things like that over the course of time, that it's made it, and even Eddie Olczyk being a part, sort of the swap part of that on the TV side of things, that has been a difference maker for them, right? In the ratings.
Yeah, no, I think, the look, there are only a couple of races that anybody is paying to get the rights to broadcast, and this is one of them. So again, I really do think, like, if we were a functioning business, we'd be looking at this and saying, how do we maximize this for everybody? If we push this back, because you got a bunch of questions here, right? One is, let's say you push this back 2 weeks and you push the Belmont, so it was basically 4 weeks, 4 weeks
You want
instead of
four? Four would be ideal, not three. Four is ideal.
four. In terms of how horses are managed today, four is better than three.
You would get better races and better horses and happier trainers and happier everybody.
In theory, yeah.
In
And
theory.
I think what I if it were me, I'd be saying, okay, we're going to go do focus groups with trainers. We're going to talk to them. Would you have run back? You know, the horses that finished second and third in the Kentucky Derby years ago, they would absolutely have come because they could make a case that they should have won the Derby and they'd want to prove it in the Preakness. They don't do that anymore. If it were 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks,
there's not
whatever,
enough money involved to do that, right?
Well, I think the way people handle horses anymore, do I want to come back in 2 weeks or do I want to wait five and then come back in the Belmont? Well, you know, the way people handle horses now, you come back in five. But then the other question is,
and 30 years of that's really eroded the Preakness.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. But at the same time, the other question is, can you keep the public's interest over the course of the series? If you extend it, is, you know, right now, 5 weeks is really easy for people to kind of pay attention to for 5 weeks. Would they for eight? I don't know. And that's stuff that you could do research into and try to figure out what's the best way to handle this that we maximize. Because the stronger the Preakness is, the better it is for the Belmont, the better it is for the Derby, and the better it is for the industry. The best version of the Triple Crown is what's in the best interest of the industry as a whole.
Well, Bob Baffert will be coming in here, Frank, this week, and he'll love Baltimore, and they love Baltimore.
He loves
and they
Baltimore.
Like coming
yep.
here and crab cakes, and but we have legendary trainers here. I mean, the horses don't talk, but the trainers do, and the Alibi Breakfast should be pretty good on Thursday. Speak to the race itself and Muth, and having a Derby winner not be a favorite.
Yeah, no, it is interesting. I mean, I thought, you know, Mystic Dan, he got the trip to win the Derby, but he ran a great race. I mean, he was really about the only horse that was up close most of the race and still there at the end. You know, the horses run 2-3 and four really were closing. You know, he's the horse that was kind of in the mix. So I think he's super alive. I mean, and particularly if you're going to get 5-2 on him, you got Bob Baffert coming in. He's got two, which is kind of interesting. He's got Muth and then he's got Imagination, who's going to break from the far outside, who might be the speed of the speed here. Imagination might be the horse on the lead. You got, I mentioned the Derby fourth place finisher. That's Catching Freedom, who had kind of a very similar trip to the winner, kind of came through inside, managed to save ground most of the way. I thought he ran a really good race. He needs some help from the pace. He needs a fast pace to run at. I think another horse that you get a price on that's real interesting is Tuscan Gold. He's for trainer Chad Brown. Chad's won the Preakness twice, both times with super lightly raced horses that had only made three starts. Tuscan Gold's made three starts, ran pretty well in the Louisiana Derby, finishing a length or so behind Catching Freedom. He's clearly a horse with some upside, and they scratched out of a race in New York, the Peter Pan, to bring him to the Preakness. I think he's going to be an interesting player in this race.
Weather, a little wetness, you know, God bless everybody that, you know, I'm going out Saturday. My wife's got a dress. You know, we're trying to stay dry.
Yeah.
Weather's everything on Thursday.
Bring your umbrella.
Yeah. Yeah. How does that change your race?
Well, you know, we're going to have to wait to see, but some horses like a wet track and others don't. And, you know, so you're going to kind of want to see, like, if you look at your past performances, there's going to be a little place where it tells you the horse's record with off tracks. And you're going to take a look at that. You know, if you got a horse that's, here's a horse, for example, well, he's not running, but Copper Tax, I have PPs with some horses not in it on. He's 4-5 on wet tracks. You see a horse with a record like that, you say, okay, this horse might move up a little bit because he clearly is fine with it when it's wet. And you see a horse is 0-3 and runs stinkers, maybe he moves down a little bit. The one thing I would do, people always say, like, how does this change your handicapping? The one thing I wouldn't do is I wouldn't lose my mind about it. Like, I wouldn't say wet track is everything. You know, it's another element in your handicapping. It's another piece in the puzzle, but it's not the thing that changes everything.
You've been winning at Betting on Racing lately. Marty McGee and Dick, I asked him last year if they were ahead or behind for a lifetime of gambling. And now bad. Big Poppy's got the hose out. We're all like, you know, all of that. And I think that was the interesting thing of talking to Alan Foreman a month ago. And I'm going to rerun that piece from the Crab Cake Tour up at Greenmount Station, was just the notion that the only thing in our society that you could legally bet on when I was born, 1968, was you had to go to the racetrack and bet on a horse. Otherwise, you're betting nickels in the alley and rolling dice and doing. There were no casinos. There's no Vegas. Like, we're just in a different place now for what horse racing used to be in a gambling vernacular for gamblers, as opposed to something where my wife puts a hat on and we go and make a day of it and have a different purpose to be there than I'm going to get rich gambling on it this week. But the gambling aspect of it and how to play it, that's probably the part where you bring people out for the first time and introduce them to horse racing. Reading the form can be very, very intimidating for people. And I think with their money, they feel better about betting on football because they feel like they know more about it, even though they don't. you know, betting a color or a silk or a funny name or, you know, what do you like the jockey? You want to bet on Baffert, whatever you bet on. What advice would you give people about betting on modern horse racing in regard to trying to do it without saying I like the number three, which is, I guess, a fine way to do it. But if they're going to read a form and they're going to get educated about it, I spent 20 minutes talking about the buyer speed figure with Dick Girardi 2 weeks ago. I didn't even realize he was one of the guys that made it. And I've known Dick 40 years. So I got educated on that. But what do you look at as an educated gambler if you're going to the track?
Well, I got a quick funny story because I talked with Andy Beyer on Derby Day in the morning. And he was talking about it. Fierceness, who had huge buyer speed figures towered over the field. And I said, well, if the track's a little bit wet, that going to move Mystic Dan up, because he was the only other horse in the field that had a triple digit buyer. He got a 101 when he won the Southwest. And he said, nah, I don't think he's that good. And so, of course, Mystic Dan turns around and wins the Kentucky Derby. So,
well, even Andy Beyer gets him wrong, you know, sometimes, right? It's a hard game, right?
Yeah, it's a brutal game. Things I tell newcomers to look at, Nestor, one are the speed figures, because that's a good way to just kind of normalize performances between horses on different days.
Called an ERA with Dick Girardi for baseball, from baseball vernacular.
Yeah,
is that it?
Yeah. It's that. It's almost like looking at a speedometer. Oh, this horse goes 60, but that one goes 80. So 80 is faster than 60, right? So I look at that. I tell people, look at the trainer, look at their win percentages, look at the jockey and their win percentages. And then, you know, when I do, you know, if I do like a handicapping 101, I say, look at the horse's earnings per start, because that gives you a rough estimate of the kind of company they're keeping. You know, are they running against good horses or bad horses? And am I running against better horses than that guy?
I had to learn maiden claiming allowance stakes. Yeah. Like, right.
all that stuff. I mean, I've been handicapping now for 30 years, more or less. And I don't know anything. I'm a complete idiot. You know, you can spend your entire life studying this. Andy Beyer has spent his entire life studying this. He was like about 10 minutes from graduating Harvard and blew it off to go to the races and never did it, and spent his entire life in this industry. You could spend your whole life handicapping horse races and still find a new thing just about every day. So it is that complicated, but it doesn't have to be. You know, you look at these couple things that I just went through, you'll know a little bit. You'll know enough to be conversant and make a better pick than I like orange and that horse has orange silks.
Well, yeah, I've gone with that. And, you know, for me, so my name is Nestor, which is a really weird name. And the 25th anniversary documentary sort of points out that I didn't like that name so much. It was also my father's name, which is another complexity that'll be in the third book. But so, you know, Ness, people call me Ness, Nasty Ness, but most of my friends call me Ness. My wife calls me Ness, right? I didn't realize Ness was like a suffix until I was like 45, and I would have totally stole Preakness years ago had I, you know, thought about it, right?
You thought it through,
So Fierce Ness runs, and I'm like, well, I got it, you know, it's got my name in it. I got to, you know.
Got to put a couple bucks
on it. The weirdest
on.
Thing is we watched the race, and my wife loves the races. Like, she just does. She loves horses. She wants to go to it's of all the things we do, music, travel, horse racing. Anytime I take her near the track or offer that, she loves it. She loves the day at the track because she loves the horses, right? So we watch the race on TV, and Mystic Dan won, and Dan is her dad's name.
Oh.
Like, so I'm like, had we been there, you would have bet that horse. I mean, I know, especially at that number, you would have put $5 on that horse at least.
Right.
We got free drinks out of this, especially at that number.
Sure.
We're not getting that number this week, and it really is. The odds are a little lower, and it's a little more crowded. 9 horses and a couple of 6-to-1s with a shot, right? I mean, it's a good race in that way.
No, I think it is. And I think it if Muth is like 8 to 5, which is his morning line, that's too short. I can't bet him at 8 to 5. I don't make his chances
You
that
don't like him
strong
that
here.
much.
I don't. I mean, he's fine, and he's a contender, but he's not a strong favorite against this group. I mean, I think Mystic Dan is more value at 5 to 2. And I mentioned Tuscan Gold. He's 8 to 1. You might get 8 to 1 on him. I think he might be a play at 8 to 1. I think Baffert's other horse is interesting too. Imagination. He's 6 to 1. He's probably the one who's going to be in front when they hit the first turn. See how far he goes.
How's the course over there? How it has a surface?
So far so good. I mean, it's been raining. It's rained every day, so they haven't been on the turf yet. And
And it's going to rain all week, kind of, sort of, enough that it's not drying out before Saturday.
yeah, I mean, I think so. I would guess if they can possibly be on the turf at all, they'll be on Friday, Saturday, if it's at all possible. The dirt course has been fine. It's been performing fine. I think it's been, when the track gets wetter, a lot of times it plays towards speed. So that's a thing you might want to keep an eye on. But so far, so good. We'll knock on wood. Pimlico is historically known as a pretty safe surface, a pretty good surface. Years and years ago, it was known as a highway. It was just speed, speed, speed. It's been much fairer in recent years.
All right. Well, Frank Vespi has all the racing coverage you need out at the Racing Biz. Also going to be at the Banner this week, and his show has been aired on WNST. And we always welcome you back. Whenever you want to talk
Thank
some
you.
racing, we love. And I hope racing becomes more relevant here, to have more folks like you on who know what's going on, and more of the public's attention to know what's going on about the future of the tracks. And hopefully, and I say this for the Orioles, I say this for the Ravens, I say this for the city, hopefully 5 years, 10 years from now, when I'm celebrating my 50th anniversary in media and releasing more lame documentaries, that racing becomes bigger than it is today. That we are investing as a state in this to fix it. And all of the pirating that's going on from Canada and Florida and California, and these people that have treated this like the redheaded stepchild, that the local part of this will rise the boats for the race and for the industry and for it being more than one day a year or 2 days a year, Maryland Million or DeFrancis Dash and McKay, and like all of that history can somehow will find present inertia to make this better, because we are investing in it. We really are. And it's important.
No, the state is putting real money behind this effort. And you referenced it, the history of Maryland racing. Maryland has played such a central, critical role in the history of horse racing in this country, and therefore the world. And Maryland has really been a critical part of it. And we all hope that it continues to be a critical part of it going forward. And if it does, we'll be covering it on the racingbiz.com.
All right, save
Sorry,
me
had to
black-eyed
do it.
Susan. I have a press credential. I want to apologize publicly to David Joseph, who I saw at the post position draw on Monday, because he said that I said, and I say a lot of things on the radio, I said that I don't get credentialed. He made it very clear. He's like, you're inside right now. I'm the guy that gives you the press pass, so be nice to me. And I'm like, yeah. I said, but I did get thrown out of the press box. He said, that's never going to happen again. I'm like, good. That way I get to say hello to Dick Girardi and Frank Vespi and my colleagues and friends in the media. So have a great race on Saturday. I love the
Thank
race.
you.
I love coming out. I'm going to be at the Alibi Breakfast eating that fried chicken. Not Rofo fried chicken, but still pretty good fried chicken and crab cakes they usually serve out at the Alibi Breakfast. So and hey, for guys like you that do it the other 364 days of the year, hats off to you for keeping it
Thank you.
square and being able to come on here and set the intentions for the future of all of this. But this is an exciting time. I mean, Frankfurt 30 years I've gone on the radio every year. And if you knew me that long, it'd be like, my God, we're going to lose the race. Are we going to lose the race? What's happening to the race? Save the race.
Yep.
Or are they going to move it to Laurel? What are these Canadian people doing? What's this EDM party? Who are these people from South Beach? And what the hell are they doing here? Like,
right.
So there was all of that going on. That's about to go away. And for that, I am heartened, 25 years into having the radio station, that it feels like real change is about to happen.
Yeah, no, Pimlico and the Preakness, that's been the problem nobody could solve for 40 years. And hopefully this is the solution. If this project comes to fruition, and certainly all the signs are trending in that way right now, if it comes to fruition, Pimlico will be a problem solved finally. And that would be huge for this industry.
All right. Well, my grandfather blew the bugle at the racetrack back in the late 50s and early 60s and did a couple of Preaknesses. So we'll continue that tradition this week. My wife will have a lovely dress. I will be mostly sober most of the time.
I'm not going to hold you to that.
I did a lot of drinking in the infield. I tell the Sunday Silence story in 89 about sort of missing out on all that and the bus rides and the fun and the shirts and the boobies and the rock and roll and the beer and the nasty van. I could do a whole book just on Preaknesses that I've forgotten, let alone the ones I've remembered. I cashed a triple ticket in 2004, which it's the only triple ticket in my life where I actually cashed a trip. It wasn't much. It was like 63. It was a bunch of favorites, but like I cashed a triple ticket one year. So 20 years later, I'm still bragging about that. I hope you cash a bunch of tickets. Frank Vespi can be found at the Baltimore Banner and at his primary home at the Racing Biz. And he chips in around here with racing coverage. Bob Baffert's coming by this week. I think Kenny McPeak's coming by this week. I know Donna Brothers is going to be here. We're going to talk yoga and good spots in Louisville and the paddock down there and all that good stuff. It is racing week. The Orioles are home all week. The NFL schedule is coming out. Lucas is being overworked. I'm under review for an Orioles press credential, and I almost saw the Northern Lights this weekend, even though I didn't. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.